You're back with Annie on Solidarity Breakfast, and we've got Don Sutherland on the line. G'day, Don. How are you?
I'm pretty good. And g'day to you and all your listeners. I hope all is going well.
Well, I know you've been having a bit of a fight down in Beauty Point, and it's actually hit the mainstream news. A fight down at the what they're calling a tourist park, but we would have called a caravan park.
Yes, it's a caravan park, class struggle takes many forms, and so what's been happening at the Beauty Point Tourist Park, great caravan park, is that a very aggressive, relatively new co-owner and manager has been forcing pensioner, both disabled and aged pensioner people who have retired into permanent structures, permanent homes inside the caravan park, as is quite common around the country. But he's been selecting some to force them out. And so there is great uncertainty in the minds of people, some of whom are very frail, about what their futures are, because they bought into the property that they own, thinking that that would be their permanent arrangement through to the end of their lives. And so really deep worry. But finally, a couple of them, and then joined by a few others, and now by just about everybody, have decided to stand up to this bloke. And that's creating momentum for the introduction into Tasmania for the first time of laws that will outline what the rights and responsibilities are of residents relative to caravan park owners. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's a very important struggle, and it's really been wonderful to see people who are feeling very defeated, complaining a lot but not knowing what to do, just in 3 weeks go from 2 people standing up to 7, 5 others joining in with them. And then now we've had, I think, 5 general meetings of residents with significant support from others in the broader community that have shifted the whole scene. And they've got their own resident association set up. And it's just wonderful to see people who, at their age, most of them, as I said, pensioners in a couple of forms, they are learning how to struggle and restoring their dignity in doing so. It's a fabulous thing to watch.
Oh, it's pretty outrageous behaviour on the part of Capital, but it's what we should expect, I guess.
Yes, well, I think everyone agrees. And the descriptions of what is going on in terms of bullying are pretty dramatic. And in other words, not just the 5 people, couples, who have been pressured into leaving or on the brink of, and I think one of them, the most recent ones, are going to be walking back in any time. But the pressure on them has been enormous, and I think everyone agrees that the main reason for that is that he wants to basically turn more and more of the accommodation to Airbnb accommodation, which means we have the reproduction in miniature, really, of the housing crisis.
Yeah, you took the words right out of my mouth, because this is a microcosm of what's happening in the broader Australian community, isn't it?
Yeah, and focused on a particular age group, essentially pensioners. There might be a few who are living on very modest superannuation arrangements, just probably reaching the end of their capacity to do that, and then, of course, shifting over into the pension and so on, but most of them are pensioners, disabled and aged pensioners.
It also takes us into what was going to be the main focus of our conversation, which is how people and women in particular are focusing or faring in a stagnant economy. Because, of course, when capital struggles, it's always everybody else's fault, isn't it?
Yes, that's correct. And the pressure to make the make wage earners and low-income workers and social welfare beneficiaries pay for a stagnant economy, for the rescue of a stagnant economy, that's the dominant trend that's been with us. That's what capitalism's all about. And that's the situation we are in at the moment. And I thought we should talk about the big issue, and I think it is a very important issue about closing the gender pay gap relative to the circumstances of a stagnant economy. And just to reinforce the point, the quarterly annual accounts that came out last week, when you dig deeper into them, not just reading the superficial descriptions of them, there's three things that stand out, or four things that stand out. Firstly, our economy is stagnant, and that is consistent with just about, not all, just about all other countries. There are a couple of exceptions where growth has declined, but not so much that you would describe the economies as stagnant, and that's China, one of them, and that's the most important one from our point of view. But there's a couple of others. Well, the second thing is that after that the overall growth of the total profit has dipped, it's been very high, so it's at record highs, but it dipped slightly in the last couple of quarters, and it's back up again. It's heading upwards again. So total profits are on the rise. The rate of exploitation is continuing to rise in trend terms, in overall terms. And the other big deal is that the rate of investment out of profits continues to fall.
God, they don't want a free lunch, do they?
Well, that last point is really crucial for everybody who understands, and it's also crucial for those who don't, just how important new investment is if we slow down and eventually stop climate heating.
Well, it's fascinating, that last little item in Kevin's piece, which is that the public purse is being given to the fat woman from the other side of, oh, I shouldn't fat shame, but the economically fat baby, Gina Rinehart, for the establishing of a rare minerals outfit. I mean, don't they actually, why are we paying them when they should be paying us?
Well, her gross profits of her corporations are incredibly strong, and that makes her personal wealth extremely high. And it means that she has to be spending a lot more even than her average on personal luxuries for her and her family and entourage and all that sort of stuff. And it is, I think there is a serious question to be asked about why the public purse should be funding a big and hungry profiteer like her company.
Exactly.
It's a really, and especially without any demand for public ownership coming into the mix.
I know, it's really revealing of the I mean, I wouldn't say corruption or the corrupted nature of our capitalism in Australia.
Yeah, it is. I think it's a this is a massive con, and it is actually in the end destructive of the efforts that are necessary to reverse climate change. This is the wrong sort of subsidy transfer. It's just not right. unless, of course, the only exception I would make to that is if there is public ownership and return on the public investment for new, to translate as new levels of public investment to hasten the defeat of climate change.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you should say this because it tells you how embedded the concept is that the welfare of the corporates and business is more important than the general well-being of the community and society. How embedded that ideological framework is in people's minds, when in actual fact, it should be the reverse.
So, yes, and you contrast that with the snail's pace for closing the gender pay gap. And I think that, you know, we ought to talk a bit about that in the context of International Women's Day just passed. And, of course, into the news just announced of this significant victory for the unions and the work their members who have been involved for aged care workers.
Yeah, that's right.
So that was just we just learned.
But you see, the thing about it is that the wages increase for the aged care workers, 28.3% or something of that sort, from a very low base, I'll have to say. So it sounds more dramatic than it really is. The government has said that the federal government said that it's going to support that increase, which means that there's more public money going over to private enterprise because of the sellout of aged care to private investment.
Well, I think the increase is a good deal more significant than I think what you meant to say. But secondly, of course, the delivery of aged care services is a combination of private sector activity, far more than it used to be, and, of course, government delivery. And however, as you correctly say, the government is going to fund these increases. And so in terms of the private sector providers who do so to make a profit, and that means that the actual cost price the total price of charging for the service must be higher than the cost price, because that's where the profit comes from. And so, yes, the government is once again providing a handout to private sector employers. I mean, without that handout, some of them couldn't operate. And that, you know, well, I think the dilemma, of course, is that under their care, in inverted commas, because the quality of some of the care is still deplorable, you know, there would be a lot of older people who would be in dire straits, even worse than what they're in.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm not kiboshing it. I'm just saying that it is another microcosm of the problems that neoliberalism has placed our economy in.
I would say this is a joint project of neoliberalism and neoliberalism.
Well, there you go.
So, I think this is an important discussion that requires a lot more clarity. And it's also in the context of a general sort of struggle that's continuing about how fast the gender pay gap is closed. And we've just had new figures from the gender, the workplace gender employment agency that reveal that the gap is continuing to close, but it still sits at somewhere between 14.5% and 21.7%, depending on the measure used. Now, that's still quite significant. That's a big deal. And that's the average. And what that new research showed, that there are a significant, probably two-thirds of employers with more than I think it's more than 1,000 workers are still doing pretty well nothing to close the gap. And so there is a lot of work to be done there. Although there's sort of progress being made, it's still very slow. The other part of all that data, by the way, on the gender pay gap is that the figures include the pay for CEOs and other executive-level managerial women. Now, most of them, there'd probably be some exceptions, do not produce any new value. What they do instead is supervise and manage the exploitation of other women and other work and men as well, but they supervise and manage the rate of exploitation of other workers. And that includes deflecting or preventing low-income women from engaging in union struggles to improve, get a better deal of wages and working conditions. And so the inclusion of executive salaries, executive women's salaries in the gender pay gap story probably distorts how serious, well, maybe it distorts how serious.
Well, it would, I mean, you know, because it's a statistical arrangement. And actually your 28%, there were others that were shown to be much higher than that, in fact, which is interesting.
I'm talking about an average, you see, so... There are going to be some parts of the workforce where the situation is far worse than the average.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And really, it's just it's also describing the sense that our society seems to think that women are open, more open to abuse than their male counterparts.
Yeah. I would like to hear what they think about the point I'm making, however, about the role of executive women, CEO and surrounding that sort of level as exploiters.
Well, yeah, that's right. Well, no, I think that people believe that the economic system that we live in, the oppressive economic system we live in, is the air we breathe, that it's impossible to live in any other way. I mean, that's the struggle, isn't it, for enlightenment?
Well, and in other words, defeating discrimination is okay, even though those who are winning a discrimination battle continue to exercise power that exploits other workers, including women.
Yeah.
I'd just like to hear what other people think about that.
Yeah, that's right.
I think that's a vital concept for us to grapple.
Well, that reminds me of something my daughter said. She said once, why does everybody want to be more like men? Why don't they want to be more like women? You know, well, as in, you know, the social construct, you know, of each of the genders, as it were.
Let's have an ongoing discussion about that, because you'd unpick that in lots of ways.
Yeah, exactly.
But the opportunity that now arises for the exploited women in the economy, in the working class, is, of course, the annual wage review coming up. And that is an opportunity. If it's a strong decision, then the impact on those industries and awards, industrial awards, that apply to those industries can be quite positive for wage-earning women. And there's a very good introduction and summary of the issues at stake around closing the gender pay gap by Lisa Heap from the Centre for Future Work. And so if you go to their website, you can read Lisa's work. And it was also published in The Conversation. But she says and argues that one bold action that the Fair Work Commission could use in the annual wage review is to grant a minimum interim 12% increase, which is just the lowest estimate, I think, of Australia's national gender pay graph, across the board for female-dominated awards. All right, so it doesn't.
Yeah, understood. Yep.
Now, the important thing here is that the Fair Work Commission's annual wage review now has the power to do that because of changes that the Labor government introduced at the end in December 2022. And I remember you and I discussing it just about a year ago.
Well, it will be interesting, won't it, to see if that actually happens. We're coming to the end of our time, so if you want to do some round-up comments, that would be the go.
Yeah, well, the first thing is that the Fair Work Commission is already doing everything possible to keep the closing the gender pay gap using the annual wage review as slow as possible. There's all about that. If you read, I'm going to write a blog about all this, blog post about all this, and I'll put in the links and all that sort of stuff. And there's a really big question about, in the midst of all this, is that Australia's, the constant state of and persistent stagnation normally impedes the capacity of the working class to struggle for a better deal. And it will be very interesting to see how that unfolds. There are only probably the only big population in the world that can confidently look forward to an improvement in their living standards in the next 5 to 10 years is the Chinese working class. With that.
Well, that's interesting, isn't it? Okay, yeah. On that note, it's funny you should say. Oh well, anyway, I can't. We really are up against the wire. But
in a blog in the next couple of days at my Solidarity Dynamics blog page.
Yeah, thanks for talking to us this morning, Don.
Lovely to catch up again, and best wishes to everybody.